If you were under the impression that downtown Vancouver was thriving, you were right. In fact, it's booming. Tech giants are descending on the city. Tourism numbers continue to climb. Office and retail construction go on unabated, and more people are calling it home. The downtown is just shy of 4 square kilometers and comprises a 90-block area. It accounts for just 10% of the city's population, but it's home to more than 35% of the jobs that exist within the more than 8,000 registered companies it houses. Over the last decade, the downtown population has grown 3 times faster than the rest of the city, and the backgrounds of residents are diverse, the majority of whom, about 90%, are either of European or Asian ancestries, and the rest represent the world. The average age of residents is 37 years, and the average household income is $66,000. Finance, science, tech, hospitality, insurance, and retail make up much of the top industry sectors, which collectively employ 135,000 people. And when it comes to starting a new company, especially a clean tech enterprise, well, Vancouver is an exceptional incubator for startups. It's ranked number 2 in Canada. So what makes for a great downtown? Transit, services, open spaces, entertainment, and safety all play important roles, each of which Vancouver ranks at or near the top of the list. Transit is a big issue. When it comes to getting around downtown, buses and SkyTrains are good at getting people in and out of the core, but once in the heart of the city, walking and cycling become attractive and efficient options. A couple of other interesting transportation facts about Vancouver are related to ride-hailing and ride-sharing. First, we are the largest North American city without Uber or Lyft. That fact may have influenced the fact that we are the number 1 car sharing center in North America, and we're right up there when it comes to bicycle sharing, where last year close to 500,000 shared bike trips were taken. And also on the list is homelessness. Vancouver is no different than other major cities where people who cannot afford to buy or rent a place to live end up on the street. The City of Vancouver continues to develop services and housing options to address the needs of people who call the street home, and more needs to be done. We invited Charles Gauthier of the Downtown Vancouver Business Improvement Association to join us for a conversation that matters on the state of downtown and what it says about the model the city is setting for livability in an urbanized world.
Conversations That Matter is a partner program for the Center for Dialogue at Simon Fraser University. The production of this program is made possible thanks to the support of the following and viewers like you.
Charles Gauthier, welcome.
Thank you.
State of downtown, what an interesting concept. Where did this idea come from, and why was it important that the Downtown Vancouver Business Improvement Association really be the author of this?
A number of other downtown organizations, all in the States, have been doing a State of Downtown report for years, and I've been watching quietly on the side, wanting to do this for our downtown. And we are now the first downtown in Canada to put out our first annual State of Downtown report. And why is it important? Mm-hmm. It's really important to take a look back and say, what was the last year like on a number of different indicators? And track those going forward. So these are going to be benchmarks for us as we move forward into the next decade.
What's it tell you? What does it say about the state of downtown Vancouver? Because I have to admit, I think of it as being kind of an isolated area, but I never really looked at it from, well, what exactly is the data? What does it tell you about what's happening downtown Vancouver?
Well, it reaffirms what many of us already thought was happening downtown. Just phenomenal growth in a variety of different areas. And tourism growth has been, off the charts in terms of cruise ships visiting our port, in terms of conventions at the convention center, including the new one that just celebrated its 10th year anniversary, the West Wing. We also know that we had close to $1.8 billion in building permits issued just within our own 90-block area of the downtown area last year.
In 2018.
Mm-hmm. And that exceeded the previous year by 200% in terms of the value of permits issued, although the number of permits issued had dropped by 10%.
Got to get you to hang on for a second while we take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back. Conversations That Matter is brought to you by Odlum Brown, a client-focused investment firm that starts client relationships with straightforward conversations focused on you, your aspirations, and your investment priorities. Odlum Brown has been a supporter of Conversations That Matter from the day we started this show. Their only condition was that we provide a non-biased conversation with people from all sides of all sorts of issues. And of course, we couldn't produce this show without the support of Oh Boy Productions. If you're looking to produce a show like this one, I suggest you reach out to Oh Boy. They can help you produce it, and they can help you build your audience. And we also need your support. I ask you to please pledge $1 per show by going to conversationsthatmatter.tv/donate, because those dollars add up and play an important role in helping us produce this show. Now, back to the show. So is that a reflection of increasing real estate values, or is it a combination of that and increased activity?
It's a combination of both of those factors. We do know that we have close to 5 million new square feet of office space being added into the downtown area, which is slightly larger than our own catchment area. But 91% of that new office space is actually going to be within the DVBA 90 block area. This is unprecedented growth during my tenure at the organization the last 27 years. And it's bodes well for the downtown in the next decade.
So what do you think has happened? You know, why is it that we see this movement into this, into the city core in Vancouver, when for decades we've been watching cities around North America moving out from the core, other than to come in to do, you know, work during the day, and then everybody goes home to the suburbs? What's happening here?
Well, a combination of factors. I think that we have an embarrassment of riches in terms of the setting, the natural setting that is attractive. Certainly the planning that's been done over the course of the last 30, 40 years, where we have encouraged residential development, not just in the West End, but in the downtown itself. Mm-hmm. And then certainly what we've seen is, an investment in our transit infrastructure over the course of the last 10 years. You know, it's been 10 years since the Canada Line opened up just prior to the 2010 Winter Olympics. And we had not seen a major investment in rail for 30 years, right? Mm-hmm. The last one would have been the Expo Line. And then since then, we've added a number of other rail options leading into the suburbs of Metro Vancouver. So I think it's all these factors, combined together, that have really made downtown the place that companies want to be. And we've had pent-up demand for a very long time in terms of new office space. And all of a sudden, developers are building office buildings on spec.
Well, everywhere I look these days, I see cranes. As a matter of fact, some of them get a little annoying because you've got to navigate your way around the construction zones. But everywhere you look, there are cranes building new what appear to be designated office space. How much new office space did your report point out that we're going to have by what I think was the year 2023?
Yeah, so we reported 4.6 million square feet, but when we launched the State of the Downtown report, one of our subject matter experts said that the number actually went up by an additional 500,000 square feet. So it's a little over 5 million square feet of new office space that will be added by 2023.
Within the next 4 to 5 years.
That's correct.
That's extraordinary. How many more people will that put into this space during the working hours of the day?
Yeah, it's going to increase the workforce population by about 15%. So we're sitting at about 137,000 people that work in the downtown area. Mm-hmm. Now, this excludes the West End. We're only reporting on downtown. Mm-hmm. So we're going to add another 20,000 jobs in our downtown peninsula. Mm-hmm. And then that starts to, guys is thinking about, are the sidewalks wide enough? Is our transit infrastructure going to be sufficient to bring people down? What about the issue of the housing inventory, housing affordability?
Right.
So when we start to look at all these new projects that are being proposed in the city itself for rental and other accommodations. You know, it's really important that we get on this really quickly because we have 20,000 new employees that will be working downtown in the next 4 years.
Well, you touched on transit a little while ago, and, you know, I can't help but think, okay, we have, you know, sort of three or four major ways of getting around. Is Vancouver walkable? Yes, in the summer. But in the winter, when it gets rainy, what can we do to ensure that more people can get around comfortably? And I think that that has to be the key word. Mm-hmm. Do we have to be looking at ways of trying to mitigate downpour on people on the sidewalk to get them out of cars and actually walking around all year round?
Well, again, you know, we have to deal with the inclement weather, just like any other city mm-hmm. has to. I mean, if you live in another part of Canada, you're dealing with snow and slush and ice mm-hmm. and everything else, and we don't get that too often in Vancouver. But I think that's why it's important that we try to have a multimodal way for people to get around and mm-hmm. let them make the decision. So I think we need to have a very robust transit system, and especially in the downtown peninsula, make sure that we have buses mm-hmm. that are frequent, and TransLink is planning that out.
Yeah.
Then we certainly need to provide people with options such as bike share. Mm-hmm. And we've done really well over the course of the last couple of years of getting that infrastructure to where it is. And we're certainly supportive of expanding it even more so. We were really surprised.
What about bike lanes? Do we have enough? And there's another component to this, because I'm a cyclist, and I think that we need to really work on cycling etiquette, if not rules of the road, because the times that I found myself in the greatest amount of danger on my bicycle is not from vehicles, but from other cyclists.
Yeah.
Have we reached that critical mass where, okay, people, we got to understand that there are rules of the road when you're cycling as well?
Yes, and I think, you know, we can select any type of mode, and, you know, someone's a car driver. There are car drivers that don't respect the rules. There are pedestrians that don't respect the rules. But I think it's a small percentage. Mm-hmm. I would say that we probably need to make more of an investment in separated bike lanes in our city, not just downtown, but throughout our city.
Mm-hmm.
And we're really excited about the reallocation of 2 to 4 lanes on the Granville Street Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And that will be an item that will be in front of council, I would think prior to the end of the calendar year, if not early into next year, about what the options are. But I think we just need to make that investment, because the more people that cycle, then it has obviously less impact on our transit system as well, because they're not riding the buses and they're not taking their cars.
Right. And we're not building new roads, and we're impinging upon the number of lanes that traffic can move through in the downtown core. So it's important that we get people out of the car. But one of the things that I found really interesting in reading the report is that we are the car sharing capital of North America. How did that happen?
Well, one would argue, or could argue, that it's primarily because we don't have ride hailing. And in the absence of ride hailing, people have gone to car sharing.
Yeah.
And I think the stat, and there's a lot of numbers in the report, but I think the stat was that in 1 year alone, Evo had like 600,000 rides just within the downtown peninsula. And I believe the time of the ride was within 20 to 30 minutes. So to me, what that tells us is that, you know, people are using car share as a replacement for ride hailing, or the absence of sufficient cabs.
So do we have enough? Do we have enough of those vehicles? Because frequently I hear people saying, I'm trying to get, you know, car share and I can't get the car, let alone complaining that we don't have ride sharing.
Well, it is a trend that we're seeing, you know, more visitations to the downtown by people that are not coming in their own vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I think that the car sharing companies are really looking at expanding what they're doing. We're starting to see companies that want to have a fleet of car share vehicles available for their tenants, for their employees.
Just for their employees?
That's correct. There are some car share companies that are looking at this as an option, and then the city needs to adjust as well, because that means allocating curb space for car shares and dedicated solely for the use of car shares rather than for anyone else.
So in looking at the report that you put out, we have tech, science, and business as being kind of the number one sector in the downtown business area. But then we move into tourism next. If we don't have ride hailing and there's a pinch on hotel rooms, how or what needs to be done to address an expansion in that, because it's such a vital, important part of our economy?
Yeah, you hit on that. The report talks about some pain points, right? Yeah. If we don't start to address these issues, we're going to be in trouble, right? Mm-hmm. If we think we have a housing affordability crisis now, adding 20,000 new employees in the next 4 years, that will make it even more challenging. So to your point about tourism, we've been working with Tourism Vancouver and the city to try to address the hotel shortage issue because it's becoming unaffordable.
Hotels, right?
That's
no
right.
No hotels.
Not on the
in
immediate.
The works at all.
Not on the immediate horizon. There are people having discussions about potentially building a standalone hotel. But there is another model. There's companies like Sonder that basically would rent one floor, two floors, for example, of a purpose-built rental and have an arrangement with the developer of that particular property. And they would get a master lease for 5 to 10 years, and they would operate it as a high-tech hotel. So you use your phone to basically get all the services that you require that in the past you would have had someone at the front desk deal with. I've stayed at a Sonder property, and it's actually a nice way. It's not an Airbnb.
Okay, that was going to be my next question.
It's a step up from an Airbnb, and you typically have a room to yourself. It's a much larger room than you would have at an Airbnb or at a hotel. But you have the convenience of having someone via an app to provide you with the services that you're looking for.
Is this going to come into conflict, though, with some of the Airbnb type of legislation that we have in the city? Because we're wanting to make sure that we are not limiting the amount of accessible housing. It becomes a bit tricky, doesn't it?
It does. Council just recently approved a motion instructing city staff to explore this model and to explore some of the challenges and, potential issues that might arise from allowing this to occur. But on the flip side, what it does is that it provides a developer of a purpose-built rental project that security of knowing that if he or she can't rent the whole thing, that there's a company like Sonder that's going to take one or two floors from a 10-story or a 20-story project and basically market it to tourists.
So let's switch over to retail, because that is another part of your mandate. With the cost of real estate here and then the cost of employment and so on, how are we doing from a retail perspective, and what are the trends that we need to pay attention to?
Well, the report identifies that rental rates are going up, and that's paralleling what's happening for office tenants as well. I use the example that we just renewed our office lease, and it's gone up by 30% for the basic rent. So what we'll see is I don't have any doubts that we'll see rents going up for retail as well. And that will put pressure on independent retailers as to whether or not they stay downtown or not. I would argue that they should stay downtown, because we're going to see a 15% bump in the number of people working downtown. And then we saw between 2011 and 2016 a 12% increase in people living downtown. So that was a population growth of 12%, compared to citywide of about 4.6% during the same period. So I would argue to independent retailers is that this is the place to be, because you're going to have a much larger customer base than what you currently have. But there's a price to pay.
Right. Well, and so I noted that the luxury end of retail seems to be robust and still growing. And so do we run the risk of becoming almost entirely luxury and missing out on some of that mid and lower range kind of retail that sometimes people need to have access to?
Absolutely. And that's something that we've identified as an issue that we need to focus on. Not that we have any control over landlords and how they want to develop their properties and rent them. But certainly we think that it's not the right path to go. I think it would make us too much at the exclusive end at the risk of alienating a number of customers that come downtown for other reasons, going to a football game or a hockey game, and then not being able to do any shopping within our district. And we
or
want
to go out to dinner because it becomes too expensive. Yeah.
Right? Frankly, we want it all, right?
Yeah.
And we need to ensure that we remain diversified, because I think the success of the downtown over the course of the last 34 years is because that we're diversified. You know, we're not all about tourism. We're not all about mining and oil. We're not all about tech. We need to ensure that we have a balance, because mm-hmm. I think a balance is better than being, for example, our neighbors to the east in the province of Alberta. If you put too much reliance on one sector, then
it's a boom and bust cycle.
Correct.
Right. So that brings us to the one other element in this, of course, which is homelessness. And that is an issue in Vancouver, and particularly in the downtown area. Despite efforts by the city to get people into housing, and they've done a great job, the homeless numbers don't seem to be changing. What responsibility do we all have to help to address that issue? Because I know you're not saying, get out of here, we don't want you. You're saying this is a real issue, and these are people who require the appropriate attention.
Yeah, I think that the strategy that the city and the province have put in place to build temporary modular housing is an excellent one, because you can get it built relatively quickly and get people housed. And as long as you have the wraparound services, they won't be a liability to the neighborhood they're in. They'll be an asset by providing those people with a roof over their head and providing them with the services that they require.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we need to do more of that. And I also think that we need to get the federal government at the table to help with the long-term housing solutions and getting back in the business of providing affordable and social housing.
So to wrap up, what are you going to do with this information? Who do you take it to, and how do they benefit from it? And by extension, how do the rest of us benefit, because we're ensuring that we have a robust downtown community?
Yeah, I would say that there's something for everyone in that report. And what we've done is that we've brought data from 30 different sources together, some of it not readily available. Our research person spent a lot of time searching for data and cleaning it, as he put it.
Mm-hmm.
So what we hope is that people will use it as a resource to plan for the future for their particular business. We will use it to advocate on issues like we just talked about on homelessness, and certainly talk about issues like increasing transit service within the region, but more particularly to the downtown area, and why it's important to do that with the increase we're going to see in job space and employees downtown. And then lastly, we're going to use it. It's going to help us map out what we do in the upcoming decade as we get ready to launch the renewal of our mandate going forward with more services and programs to meet the needs that are out there, and with the increase in the number of employees that will be working downtown and the visitors and people that live here.
Mm-hmm. So now that you have this report in hand, in a word, what does the immediate future for the downtown look like?
It looks bright.
Isn't that wonderful? Thanks, Charles. Thanks for coming and sharing this with us.